A lyric from Tom Waits. Eggs and sausage and a side of toast. Coffee in a roll. Hash browns over easy. Chili in a bowl with burgers and fries. What kind of pie? Yeah. Now this lyric was taken from his first song entitled Eggs and Sausage from his 1975 album Nighthawks at the Diner. Now this was only his fourth studio album, and it was actually recorded live in front of a small audience, and it was sort of meant to recreate the atmosphere of a small jazz club. Now, if I'm going to be honest with you, I don't lie on this podcast. I tell the truth. I tell it how it is, right? I'm not a big Tom Waits fan. Never been. I can't speak for myself down the road, but most likely never will be a Tom Waits fan. But given this is a podcast about eggs, as you can assume, it'd be a good idea to start the intro with something about eggs. So there we go. So hey there, my name's Brett, and I'd like to welcome you back to the very second episode of my new podcast, all about the egg. Now, I wanted to start our journey together with this episode talking about a bit about the egg industry. Now, we're going to get into a little bit of everything here. It's going to be a bit of a trivia episode, lots of facts and data. We're going to talk about where do eggs come from, and I'm not talking about, you know, literally where they come from, because we all know the eggs we eat are most likely coming out of a chicken's rear end or hiney hole. But where do they come from? Like the farms they come from. Where do they go? All the different places. Because we all know you can go to a diner and get some eggs and bacon and things like that. But how do they get there? Where? What distribution centers do they come from to get to your plate? And on that, how did they get from the chicken's bottom to your breakfast plate? We're going to go into a little bit of the industry, a little bit of distribution, and we're also, luckily this episode, we're going to talk to my girlfriend, who is currently alive. She works a bit in the egg industry, and she's also got some intel on this great new invention. It's actually a 100% vegan egg replacer. Now, she is vegan. She does not eat any products that come from animals. But I guess I've never really heard of this before, but there's supposedly some kind of egg replacer that's supposed to be a lot like eggs, but you don't have any actual egg in it, which is pretty interesting. So now, before we get into the meat and potatoes here, I just want to take a moment and thank all of you who've sent recommendations for lawyers and attorneys. I greatly appreciate that. And those of you who did will be happy to know I've found one of them to defend me against these accusations of murdering my ex-wife. Now, I won't give out his last name just for sake of privacy, but we can say his name is Steve. And I'm pretty confident in him, and I'm pretty confident that we're going to get in there and beat this thing. Now, he did find the podcast, and I guess he listened to the first episode that I've recorded, and he advised me not to share too much about the case, just for legal precautions. So I'm going to try and keep the details to a minimum. But right now, what I can tell you is it's not looking very good. I'm still periodically going to police interviews voluntarily, as I have nothing to hide. And they've informed me that a neighbor has come forward with some Ring doorbell footage, which that's a new technology I did not know existed. I didn't think they made cameras small enough to fit into a doorbell. So that's pretty interesting. But they found it was the across the street neighbor, and they have footage of this guy the night of the murder sneaking around their house, well, sneaking around my ex-wife's house with what appears to be a knife. And it's actually kind of interesting because he looks a lot like me, like similar build. He's wearing all black like I normally do. And one of the logos on one of his, on his shirt actually looks a lot like a shirt that I have, which I think is, you know, it's a bit morbid, but it's pretty funny. It's almost like my doppelganger sneaking around my ex-wife's house that night, which is, you know, unfortunate because that doesn't really help my case, but in a sort of morbid way, it's kind of funny. Also, another thing the police have come forward with, so the night, the first interview they took with me, I had claimed I hadn't been out of the house, which they actually took a look at my bank statement, my recent bank statement, and found that I had gone to a local gas station and I'd purchased made-to-order food, which, you know, at the time of that interview, I didn't remember. I mean, that was already a few weeks previously by that point, so I didn't remember going anywhere that night. And unfortunately, because of that and because of the Ring camera doorbell footage, the doorbell footage, I mean, come on, that just sounds ridiculous. That can't be a thing. But just because of those two things, they're supposedly really starting to look into me as the primary suspect for this case, which is unfortunate as I had nothing to do with this again. But as we go forward, I'm sure I will be able to provide you limited updates on this case. I'll talk more to Steve, my attorney, my lawyer, my lawman, and see all what specifics I can share with you. But, you know, as we go forward, I'm sure things will become more clear, both for you and I. But I still do defend my innocence against these accusations, and I hope infinitely that they can soon find the real killer, who is not me. Now, just one more thing in regards to all this. I've found out recently, both through Steve and through interviews with the police, that my ex-wife's parents have actually been, they've got a lot to say about me, and they've also been interviewing with police just to get, like, potential suspects, background info, you know, standard procedures. But they have been talking quite a load of crap on me. I try not to swear on this podcast, but I've heard some things both from the police and from my lawyer, Steve, and I am not pleased about this. And I would just like to let you know, Denise and Ron. Denise, I'm not afraid to tell people that you dye your hair. And Ron, you're not hiding that glass eye from anyone. We all know you have a glass eye. So just as a note to you two, if you want to keep talking smack on me to the police and to my representation, I've got plenty of dirt I can spill on you two. And to Steve, if you're listening to this and you think it's too much information to be sharing, go to hell. This is my podcast, not yours, and I will say what I'd like to. So again, I just want to re-acknowledge those who emailed me in regards to the lawyers and in their support for the legal proceedings that are going on right now. I appreciate you, and I thank you very much. And I would like to reply to an email here on the podcast, because I know this person will hear it. Someone named Autumn Leaves Lover, that's L-U-V-R, lover, at AOL.com. I don't appreciate being called slurs, first of all. And no, I will not send you photos of me, quote, eating sloppy eggs, unquote. I just want to tell you to stop your emails. You have a problem, and you should get help for that. Thank you. So, anywho, I think it's about time that we dive in and start uncovering the great mysteries of the U.S. egg industry. So now I want you to picture yourself seated at a booth of a local diner on a sunny Sunday morning. It's mid-fall. The temperatures outdoors are a brisk 45 degrees. And there's even a bit of frost clung to the edges of brown leaves as they lie on the ground. The diner is bustling with customers, all talking excitedly about their upcoming holiday plans and hopes for what they might find lying under the tree on Christmas morning. Waiters and waitresses buzz by with trays nearly spilling over with steaming breakfast dishes. The smell of freshly brewed coffee hangs constantly in the air, and ripples of soft chatter and cutlery clinking on the porcelain plates swell as hungry diners enjoy their long-awaited Sunday breakfast. The warm sun pours in from the unshielded windows next to you, providing protection from the shivery weather outside. Before you know it, your waitress arrives at your table and politely places down your breakfast. Of course, two eggs, over medium, white toast, home fries, and a side of bacon. She tops off your coffee, which you take strong and black. All is right in the world. All is calm. As you begin to work through the well-rehearsed stages of your breakfast-eating process, your mind begins to wander. Where did this meal come from? Who cooked it? Who provided the goods in which this diner uses? Well, my friends, all will be revealed here on All About the Egg. Today, we're going to talk a bit about egg production in the United States. We're also going to hear from my alive girlfriend, not the dead ex-wife, who's going to tell us a bit about her job and her role in the egg industry. And she's also going to tell us a little bit about a new vegan egg replacer. Here on All About the Egg. Now, would you believe that in recent years, reports have shown that the average American eats about 279 eggs per year? Now, that's an egg a day for just over three quarters of the year. Now, this number has actually gone down quite a bit in the past 80 or so years, because at the height of World War II, egg consumption was at its peak. Back then, the average American ate over 400 eggs per year. Now, that sounds a bit nuts, and I gotta level with you, that is a bit nuts. Over 400 eggs per year. That is a little bit over an egg a day, which I don't know about any of you, but I cook breakfast for myself before work when I'm feeling saucy, but 9 times out of 10, I don't feel that saucy, okay? But you have to imagine, that's a lot of eggs in a year. Thinking about one egg a day, eating one egg a day, is kind of nuts. So now, let's get into a little bit of cost about this, okay? So a cost per dozen eggs in 1945, at the height of American egg consumption, was 58 cents per dozen eggs, which if you follow the U.S. dollar inflation, its current value in today's money would cost just a little over $10, which is an interesting figure. So a dozen eggs right now with normal inflation could cost, like I just said, a little over $10. But currently, as of September 2024 at least, they're only at $3.82 per dozen average across the U.S. Now, that is very interesting. Well, I mean, there's a number of factors that go into it. Like we talked about last podcast, egg prices have gone up relatively considerably since the glory egg days in the mid-1940s. But interestingly enough, they're part of a small group of American products that are relatively unaffected by inflation, which is pretty interesting. Now, to this day, you know, they should be $10, but they're still only sitting at $3.82 per dozen. So maybe if you're low on funds or you're trying to pinch pennies, maybe the next time you make a PB&J, you'll substitute a two-egg Brett's Favored Special. So now, one interesting metric I'd like to review here is the cost per egg in 1945. So now, as we've discussed, the price per dozen eggs in 1945 was 58 cents per dozen egg. Now, let's divide that by 12. We have a cost of 5 cents per egg. Now, that's pretty reasonable. What we'll do now is we'll say, remember that 5 cents per egg. So now, we're going to take $3.82. That's the cost of a dozen eggs as of 2024, divided by 12. We are now at 32 cents per egg. Now, that is quite a considerable step, but you also have to imagine we're, what, at almost 80 years, 79 years difference in price. But anywho, we're going to go back to 1945, and we're going to take our 5-cent egg. Okay. Now, remember we said that Americans at the time ate over 400 eggs per year. So for a 5-cent egg, that is only a little less than $20 worth of eggs for the entire year. $20 back then could get you over 400 eggs. Come on, that's a deal. 400 eggs for $20? Jeez Louise. Now, egg consumption, of course, went down. Well, it went down and up a little bit throughout the years. It fluctuated quite a bit. And then in the early 90s, it actually reached its historical low in the United States. There were some health concerns that were brought up. Eggs containing a lot of cholesterol was a big factor in people putting down the egg. But recently, those claims from the early 90s have been mostly disproven, and eggs are considered to be a more healthy part of the diet, and we're starting to eat more eggs. Now, currently, the United States produces over 9 billion eggs per year. In 2020, the U.S. exported almost 300 million dozen eggs and various egg products to other countries, mostly including China, Mexico, and Taiwan. And we actually collected nearly $200 million from Mexico alone, just through egg and egg product exports. And now in 2023, our exports in total to everyone in the world accounted for more than double that, almost triple that, at $760 million in exports, just in eggs and eggs products alone. Now, the rest of the eggs are kept for the United States, feeding businesses and, of course, as use in products. Now, as we stand, there are well over 225,000 poultry farms in the United States. Iowa is the biggest producer of eggs, accounting for about 15% of egg production in the United States. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but out of 50 states, Iowa accounts for 15% of the egg production. And Ohio and Indiana, funnily enough, are fairly closely behind, and they're both about 9% of egg production in the United States. Now, funny enough, Cal-Maine Foods, the largest egg producer in the United States, is actually based in Jackson, Mississippi. They've been around since 1969, and they've been around. They've slowly grown as egg producer, and by now they are the largest in the country. And recently they've actually been coming under fire. They've been in the news a little bit for price gouging. Now, that's something that affects a lot of products. It affects a lot of industries, and as a result, affects us, the consumer. Now, one of the more recent times they've been involved in price gouging accusations was during the beginning of the COVID pandemic, where a lot of producers and manufacturers were driving up the prices of their goods because they could, because they were in need. They were actually taken to court over price gouging allegations, and I unfortunately couldn't find any further information about this other than they were taken to court. I'm not aware of the outcome of their case, but it is a very interesting thing to think about. I mean, you know, when the resources become scarce and harder to get, the prices do certainly have to go up because they're harder to obtain. And unfortunately, I don't know much about that topic because I am not an egg farmer and certainly was not then. So I'm not aware of how difficult these eggs were to obtain back then. But it's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, how that affects the price of eggs and the average across the states. Interesting thing to think about. But now let's think a little bit about how the eggs actually get to your plate. Now, companies all over the United States, companies quite like Cal-Maine, collect their eggs, of course, right from the chicken's rear end. We know this. The chicken shoots the egg at high velocities, extremely high velocities. So this must be controlled by computers. The chicken will shoot this out of its hiney hole, or deep brown hole, as one might say. It will do this at farms much like Cal-Maine across the country. The chicken will spray and squirt its egg right onto a conveyor belt. And from there, it will go into sort of an array of conveyor belts and machines. And now these machines have a very specific task ahead of them. They will firstly take the egg, wash it, and sanitize it, of course. Because, you know, I don't know about you, there might be some freaky eggheads out there, but I don't want a chicken's bottom juice and spray and squirt all over my egg shell. So then using different machines, photo imaging technology, they will size the eggs. And then a very interesting part in this process, they're actually going to do a thing called spot checking. Now, as far as I'm aware, they don't use any technology for this. They mostly rely on humans. And what happens in this step, it's kind of like a final check, a final inspection of these eggs, where they run them on a conveyor belt over a bright light, and that shines into the eggs, and these people stand next to the eggs, next to the conveyor belt, and they'll actually look into the egg, and if they see any imperfections in this egg, such as maybe a blotch or dark spot on the shell, or sometimes even a chicken embryo inside, they'll have the time to pluck those eggs out of the conveyor belt, and they can discard them or use them for other things accordingly. Now, this is, you'd have to imagine that's got to be a pretty stressful job, because you're basically the last thing, the last step of egg production before your egg reaches the consumer. Sounds like a very stressful job. And now on top of that, some farms will actually employ a USDA licensed spot checker who will ensure that everything is USDA certified, everything's being processed and inspected properly. Now, one interesting thing that's come to mind pretty recently, and you hear stories about this occasionally, that one chicken embryo may actually sneak through the spot checking process. This happened not to me personally, but actually to my sister. One time she was baking cookies and cracked an egg into the mixing bowl. She already had all her other fixings in there. And don't you know what fell out? Not just egg yolk and egg white like normal, but actually a chicken embryo. So that's an interesting thing to think about and something that you should mentally prepare for next time you crack an egg into a bowl, especially when it's already loaded up with all your cookie ingredients. So now back to the processing plant. Once these eggs are inspected and ready to go, they are loaded into containers of varietal sizes. Some go into cartons, some go into crates. Once these are all packaged, they are shrink-wrapped, and then they're held in refrigeration until they're ready to ship. Now, it depends on the egg producer, but some of the eggs will go to different manufacturers who might use these eggs in their production, but most of them will actually travel to various distribution warehouses, and it's there where they will stay refrigerated until they're ready to send to restaurants. And transportation through these different places in the production process will happen in special refrigerated trucks. Now, some of these trucks are so high-tech and advanced that they're held at 41 degrees or a little less. Maybe we'll say upper 30s. And they have special sensors in the trucks, in the refrigeration compartments, that will alert both the driver and the company's technicians and the company itself that the truck is out of temp. It will send them an alert, and then they'll be able to fix it right away, not to spoil anything, not to spoil any temperature-controlled food on the truck. Now, the truck drivers will deliver this food and these eggs to the restaurants that they need to go to, and it's there they will maintain refrigeration until they're ready for use, until you order the egg, and then the egg chef will cook that up for you however your heart desires. And now, you wouldn't guess it, but I actually have for you now an interview with my wonderful, beautiful girlfriend. Now, she actually works a little bit in the egg industry, and she's going to tell us a little bit about what she does, how she works with eggs, and she's also going to tell us a little bit about that new vegan egg replacer I was telling you about. So let's dive in here on All About the Egg. Hi there! So I'm sitting here somewhere in the endless mountains of Pennsylvania, unfortunately, outside of any incorporated
boroughs or townships. So unfortunately, I don't have any specific location to tell you, but I can tell you that. Now, I'm lucky enough to be seated here next to my beautiful girlfriend, Jill. We are together now for about 2 months. We got together fairly shortly after the divorce, and now, you know, she's getting like the second hand of all my legal problems. But enough about that. So now, Jill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm on vacation in the Endless Mountains, and I'm eating popped corn.
And drinking, what is that there between your blue-jeaned legs?
A crisp apple cider.
Interesting. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do with the business?
So I'm responsible for the baked goods of a cafe on campus, as well as dinner rolls for both the restaurants on campus and desserts and birthday cakes.
Oh, that's very interesting. Do you make the birthday cakes custom?
We do, yes.
Wow. Are you good at piping the icing on?
I'm somewhat of a piping professional, one could say, yeah.
So now, can you tell me roughly about how many eggs you might use throughout the day?
Roughly, we keep 2 cases of shelled whole pasteurized eggs. And I could be wrong, but I want to say there's 10 flats per case, which contains 30 eggs. So I'll let you do the math.
300 eggs.
300 eggs. So I think there's 600 in there. So about 10% of that total amount per day. But we also use liquid eggs just as a time saver to not sit there and crack pounds worth of eggs. So that couldn't tell you. After that, I don't know how to measure eggs in liquid quite like that. I do know, but I'm not going to keep track.
Do you keep cases of these liquid eggs?
Yes, we do. So it's cartons that contain liquid egg.
So now, I'm assuming with you keeping that many eggs on hand, do you guys bake in large quantities?
Yes!
Wow, very interesting. Now, can you tell me, what exactly is the point of baking with eggs? What is their benefit?
Well, it would really depend on what exact item you're referencing to, because it can serve different purposes.
Tell me a little about them.
So the main purpose of eggs in baking, general baking, home baking, is not only a flavoring agent. They add a rich flavor to your product, but it's mostly a leavening agent, which means it aids in the binding and rising of the product. But that's a really broad, vague answer. Can you give me an example of something you're...
Like in cookies.
Okay.
Why do we put eggs in cookies?
So that's a pretty easy one. So with cookies, the main point of that, it depends on what kind of cookie you're making, but it's there for flavor. If you take out the egg in a chocolate chip cookie, it's going to taste like flour if you get no chocolate in your bite. But it does help with that color development you see, make it nice and brown.
Very interesting. And thank you for informing us. So now, Jill, I've heard from others and from you, you consider yourself to be a vegan. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that means that you eat no parts of animals or animal products, such as drinking milk. Or even eating eggs, is that right?
Yeah, there's no eggs in this body for 13 years.
That's right. Okay. So, 13 years you've been vegan.
Yes.
Very interesting. So, recently in our dating, I've noticed that you don't cook with real eggs. So, instead of cooking with real eggs, you actually use this new sort of technology, this kind of goo. It's like a real goo that you throw in the pan. And it's funny because once it's done cooking, it actually turns into eggs. But I've got good news for you. It's not real eggs. It's actually vegan. So you can actually cook with these as yourself being vegan. Have you ever used this product?
Yes.
Cool beans. Now, can you tell me a little bit about what it's made out of and what the purpose of it is.
Just Egg is mung bean, actually, mostly, and it replicates the way an egg cooks.
Now, how about the taste and texture?
In my opinion, having not had eggs for quite some time, I would say they're pretty similar. It's not, you know, whites with a yolk. It's all combined, so you do have that as a limitation to your cooking abilities. But otherwise, I would say they're pretty spot on.
So how does it cook? Does it cook the same as a real egg?
Yep, you just put it on the stove in a pan, scramble it. You can make omelets with it, do whatever you want.
So now, have you ever tried baking with it? Does it work in baking?
I have not tried baking with it. My grandmother has. It worked out for her recipe, but I don't consider that product to be quite cost effective. Be kind of expensive for low profit.
Very interesting. So now one last question I have for you before we end our interview. What's your favorite way to cook an egg?
I prefer to leave it with the chicken it came from. Thank you.
Okay, Jill. Well, I guess that concludes our interview, and I'm looking forward to going back on our Endless Mountains vacation, and I'm really looking forward to our hiking trip later. I love you, and I wish you the best.
Well, I have to say, this is probably my most favorite episode we've done so far, in spades. I'm very happy to have welcomed my girlfriend to the podcast to pick her brain a little bit about what she does for a living and how she gets to interact with eggs each and every day. I've actually reached out to a number of egg suppliers in my local area, but none seem to be interested in interviewing on the podcast. And believe me, I've reached out to a number of them. But on the bright side, I've actually learned a great deal of these suppliers provide tours of their facilities, and I'm really considering taking a tour. And who knows, maybe you'll even get to hear a little bit about it here on All About the Egg. Next episode, I'm going to dive a little bit more into egg distribution, and we'll keep trying to get into contact with my local egg producers. And I'll see if I'll even be able to wrangle some interviews with them and how they work to provide us with those beautiful white balls we all love. We're also going to talk with a few real-life egg chefs to get their insight on the ever-evolving, beautiful egg industry. Until then, I hope to see you again on All About the Egg. Thanks for joining me.